I think one of the delusions of being an adult is that you're supposed to like have one thing that you're interested in and stick with it for the rest of your life. I don't know about you, but if you're like me, you just have all sorts of varying interests of like varying levels of motivation at different times. I think I've been super intentional over the last 5 years. I didn't want to create another job for myself. I knew how to do jobs and like maximize for like my career success. So I really maximize for searching for things I like doing. I call it design for liking work. And so I would do like, I call it like ship or quit. Like ship five things, design it to quit. So like you're like, I'm definitely gonna quit after five unless some realization emerges, and then I'm gonna figure out what to do next with that information.
What do you want to do with your life?
What do you want to do with your life?
What do you want to do with your life?
Understandably, a tough question for any 20-something to answer. So join me, your host, Taylor Marks of the Rise Year podcast, as I talk with some cool people about what they do and occasionally go on long rants of my own about the pains of growing up.
All right, so today I'm here with Paul Millard, and we're going to chat about careers, The Pathless Path, his recent book, and just a bunch of other different stuff like that. So thank you so much for coming on, Paul.
Awesome to be here, Taylor.
So I guess we'll start off. If you want to give, you know, a 60-second intro of who you are, what you do, and kind of all that.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been doing this self-employed thing for about 5 years. I've been doing a bit of writing, consulting, coaching, a lot of non-work periods as well. And prior to that, I was kind of on the fast track to success, strategy consulting, top business school. And more than that, I'm just deeply a curious person. I love having conversations like this. I like reading. I like connecting with people. And yeah, excited to dig in.
All right, so I guess we'll kind of start fairly towards the beginning of your book. You mentioned that here you are making $200,000 and you're not happy. Like you said just a few minutes ago, you're on a fast track to success and kind of on the traditional sense of the measures there. And what was kind of, you talk about it, but for people who haven't read your book, like what was the pivotal moment, if there was, where you're like, this is not my version of success. This isn't what I want. Like, I want something different.
As I kind of try to talk about in the book, it wasn't always clear for me that there was a single moment as it was happening. I think it was kind of a slow waking up. There were a series of events, health crisis, losing people that mattered to me, like starting to do experiments on the side, all of which forced me to get more real with what I was doing. I think one of the challenges when you're succeeding with work is nobody asks you, why are you doing this? Everyone just assumes and tells you that you're doing the right thing. Good job. Keep going. Right? That's kind of like the hidden implicit assumption. So I really had to start asking myself this question, like, what if I don't really want any of this? Right? And it wasn't as if I accrued some sort of enormous wealth. Like I didn't make much for the first 3 years after college. Then I went to grad school and I went into like $70,000 of debt. So I tried to pay that off as soon as possible. And I started making like money. And as soon as I paid off my debt and started building up some savings, more than like a couple of months of living expenses, I think that was what kind of triggered me to say, okay, maybe I can experiment with something else now.
So was there anyone that you had exposure to at this time that was living differently and kind of on that pathless path?
Not really. And I think that's part of the problem. And the first exposure was through books and podcasts, podcasts like Tim Ferriss's, his life especially. I had a lot of people he interviewed, people like Seth Godin. I was reading his books. He was doing all sorts of weird experiments with online learning, and he just takes his own way. So I think my first inspirations were through like public personalities. And that started around 2014, 2015. I think that's when podcasts really started taking off. People started sharing more stories. Instagram became more nichified into like all sorts of different paths. So it's really incredible. I wish I had this when I was young. Like, and I think young people now, like the people you communicate with, almost have the opposite problem, right? You're 18 and in college and you see all these different possible lives. It's digital nomad life, van life, solopreneur life, start a company. And that can be overwhelming too. Like in some respects, I feel a little lucky that I just had this very narrow blinders path, especially the first 5 years of my career. But then I wish I had more inspiration, especially just someone in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm towards the generation that there's literally an abundance of options, and it's almost kind of paralyzing, like you said, to think about the amount of options that you do have available to you. While it is good, but it's like, oh my God, I can do 5 million different things. So I guess for the people that are kind of in that situation then, like they know that this alternative life exists, but they don't necessarily maybe know which direction to go. And like, how would you try and help them navigate that kind of avenue?
Step one is just talking to those people so they can reach out to people like you, listen to your podcast and ask like, what was your actual journey like? We have the tendency to tell the story as, oh, I boldly quit my job and started this really successful thing afterwards. That's not what happens to most people. Most people slowly wake up to different realizations that they want to take a different path. And then they start experimenting and then they get some sort of signal or they have this deep down intuition that this is the new path they want to take. So yeah, talk to people. And then I think the other thing is just to test out experiments. We tend to think of life as all or nothing leaps when in fact you can just test it out, right? I don't know how you started your podcast, but I started mine by just saying, all right, I'm going to do 5 episodes and then just see if I like it. So it was very low budget production. I spent $100 on a mic and I was like, oh, this is fun. I'm not going to make money from this, but this is something worth doing in the sake of itself.
Yeah, pretty similar story. I had been out of college for, I guess, about 6 months at that point. So it was January of 2020. Just moved to Atlanta and didn't have a job when I had moved there, but I was living with some friends and I was like, all right, I don't know what I want to do, but I'm really curious about talking to people. And kind of basically the premise initially was to get behind the job title. I was really curious why people chose the jobs that they chose, because here I was, an IT degree, pretty good school, and I'd done all of these things, but I didn't really want a normal job. And part of it was fear. Part of it was stubbornness of trying to go a different way. So, you know, a lot of different factors at play. But so I started the podcast to kind of just figure out what I wanted to do, but then also in the hopes of maybe that would help me land a job by talking to someone. Yeah. So I think I spent $30 at Best Buy for like a little clip-on mic, and yeah, I used Anchor. So pretty low budget. And well, it's been, I guess, over 2 years now. So kept it going.
What happened along the way?
There would be like highs and lows, depending on who I would talk to and kind of other factors in life. But then I started to really just get a high on the sense of having these conversations with people, because especially during the pandemic, like most of which has been during the pandemic and it's been remote, it's been a way for me to meet people and engage and have those conversations. And then actually, I guess in October of last year, I was able to like actually answer the questions of what do I want to do? And I'd also achieved the other one of getting jobs through my podcast. So both of the factors had been met, not right away, but obviously with some time.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you kind of started off with like one thing, but then the answers kind of emerge through the experience of doing, right? And I think I've seen that over and over again with people that just start stuff and try stuff. And I think the hurdles to get past are realizing you don't actually need permission anymore. I know when I was graduating college, I never would have done something like you were doing, because I thought to like do a podcast, you needed to have the qualifications to be at a media company, right? Or something like that. It's just not true. And more people are slowly waking up to that.
Do you ever kind of think about, this takes up a lot of my time, but you think about the things that you actually invest time in. So for example, the podcast is probably one of the last things I would have expected myself to keep with, but there's other things, be it maybe running or something else where you would have initially thought that I would have spent more time and I would have kept that up, but then those things drop off and they kind of ebb and flow. Do you have things in your life that maybe run on a similar parallel of that?
Yeah. And I think one of the delusions of being an adult is that you're supposed to like have one thing that you're interested in and stick with it for the rest of your life. I don't know about you, but if you're like me, you just have all sorts of varying interests of like varying levels of motivation at different times. I think I've been super intentional over the last 5 years. I didn't want to create another job for myself. I knew how to do jobs and like maximize for like my career success. So I really maximize for searching for things I like doing. I call it design for liking work. And so I would do like, I call it like ship or quit, like ship 5 things, design it to quit. So like, you're like, I'm definitely going to quit after 5 unless some realization emerges, and then I'm going to figure out what to do next with that information. So I really only end up committing to things I really like doing. That's how I ended up writing a book, because I kept saying yes to further kind of signals from people that said they like my writing, and just paying attention. Do I like this? Do I like writing? Do I like the challenge of trying to get better? And it was always a yes, yes, yes. I want to keep going.
And then what was the process like for you writing that book? Was it fairly simple? Considering like you have all these blog posts and all this other content out there that, you know, I don't know if you took the blog posts and just put them in there and then tweaked them and added stuff, but like you already have a lot of content, whereas someone who's kind of just trying to write from a blank slate, or did you find that it was a pretty hard process?
It was easy and hard. I think it was easy in the sense that I knew like in my heart what I wanted to write. I think getting that to translate to the page though is the hard thing, right? I think we all know deep down in our core like what we really care about and what we believe, but it takes like some excavating to get it out. So I think that was kind of the high level framing. I think the tactical understanding of what write a book means shifted too. I started out with, oh, I'll just throw some blog posts together and edit it and ship. I announced my first launch date, I think like March 15th. I started writing in December. That obviously didn't happen, but I quickly, going into the process, I realized, okay, blogging is kind of different. Blogging is your ideas are interconnected. You kind of link back and stuff. That's not a book. A book is a read through once experience. So you're not going to have as much interconnectedness. You're going to have themes that keep showing up, and there needs to be like deeper ideas that pop throughout the book. And then, yeah, the more I wrote, the better I got at writing, which meant I had to go back to the earlier stuff and level that up. And then like, so there were all these layers throughout the process. It was a fun experience though. I loved it.
Yeah. You would do it again?
I don't know about again. It's a big commitment, but if the idea emerges, yeah, I think I would do it again.
Okay. We'll be waiting for another book from you and put on the bookshelf. But when I say I really did enjoy your book, because it's honestly, so I'm 24, been out of school for almost 3 years, and I wish it was something that I would have had, you know, post coming out of school. I remember I read, you had, was it Rolf Potts? You had a quote by him in your book. And so I read Vagabonding and read some other books here and there, but I really couldn't find any information on anyone who had decided to go on kind of an alternative route in life. And so I was sitting with a lot of discomfort of like, I don't know what to do, but I also know in my bones that I like don't want to do something that's like necessarily traditional. And so here you are with this book that provides, you know, you're not providing like a structure and a script as you kind of talk about some things, but you're providing like a baseline of a foundation of like, hey, here are some things that you can build into your life and you can be 100% like a functioning human. You can live a life that you want that brings you joy. And that brought me like a lot of satisfaction, like reading it now and still like struggling with some of the things, but I think you provide a lot of good points for anyone at any stage who's looking to kind of go on that endeavor.
That's amazing because you're exactly the kind of person I wrote it for. So, I mean, that makes it all worth it for me. And that's just so cool. I think similar for me, I read a book by Amy McMillan. She's a bit younger too. She wrote a book called Reclaiming Control. And she took a year, she worked for 1 year and then took a year off during the pandemic. And I read it. It was like a short book, 100 pages. And it was just like, oh my God, I wish 100 of these existed. And then that's when I kind of knew I had to write my own. So I don't like to like say things without following my own advice. But yeah, and I think I don't like the like checklist, how to launch a startup, how to make $100,000 on the internet. I don't think that advice is relevant for people. I think what is relevant is you can take an unconventional path and it will probably feel terrible and it might also be worth it. Right? And then trying to show that that's true through my own experience.
Yeah, 100%. You hit the nail on the head right there. Like, because I was actually talking about this last night, but in the context of freelancing and like one of the things I do is I help people build communities and stuff. And so we were talking about courses and why they typically don't tend to work for like the average person, because, you know, it goes back to having this preset checklist of like, okay, here's how to make $10,000 in a month. And it lists out all these things, but you don't take into account everyone's environment and their past history and all of these other things. And so it may work for one person out of 100 or something like that. And so having a book or at least like life lessons and like a way to build a life, I think that's probably more of what your book probably is like a way to build a life, and you're showing people that it can be done essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously I don't want people to follow my path. It's more that, okay, here are things you might feel along the way and you're not crazy. And that's it.
Not crazy.
It's like, I basically just want to be that like friend for people that like Seth Godin and Tim Ferriss were for me at the beginning of my journey. It's like just knowing there were other crazy people in the world that wanted to take a different path. That's like crazy, right? Because I mean, nobody in my peer circle is doing what I am doing. They were all like making great money and had great career prospects. How the hell, like, it seems really stupid to walk away from that. Like, I haven't replaced that income or even come close, but it's like definitely worth it.
Do you feel like a greater sense of happiness and life satisfaction and just kind of overall well-being?
It was a journey for me. I think at the beginning, it was so exciting to have more freedom and space in my life, but also I was deeply uncertain, very unsure, very scared, also feeling like I needed to prove that what I was doing was right. Right. And that puts you in opposition to the world. The world is centered around full-time jobs, especially in America, whether we want that to be the case or not. I don't like to live in worlds of shoulds. I like to like observe how the world actually works. And so I think I tried to like really like double down. My path's right. Like everyone who takes an unconventional path gets to the stage where they're like, everyone should quit their job. Right? Now I'm like, I don't think everyone should quit their job, but like, I think everyone maybe should ask some deeper questions about what they want and like try to get that to show up in their life a little more. And so then I think dealing with that and then like writing the book really helped me make sense of my own journey. And I think especially in like the last year or two, I've just had a lot more fun with life. Try to inject like more of the playful side, doing more of the stuff I loved doing as a kid, like playing basketball, playing tennis. Like I've been doing yo-yo and that's been really fun just to like reconnect with like that inner child.
So I think this is actually a good segue into one of the points that I wrote down about your book is you talk about leisure and you also talk about, I want to kind of correlate that to the worker identity that you talked about and how everyone's kind of go, go, go. So I guess the first part on leisure, if you want to talk a little bit about like the history of how leisure was viewed and then kind of how we view it now, that'd be, I think that would be kind of interesting.
The ancient Greeks defined work as the state of not being at leisure. The takeaway from that is that leisure was seen as one of the most like vital elements to like a fulfilling life. So leisure, many people have defined it in different ways, but a more historical definition is like an active engagement with the world. So that doesn't mean like receptive, like passivity. It doesn't mean sitting there and watching TV. That's kind of what we associate leisure with now, but the word has lost its meaning or expanded into many other things. But historically, like leisure was seen as like actively engaging in things that bring you alive, creative activity, reflection, meditation, contemplating like your state in the world. It's really a state of being alive and awake and connected to like what matters. So, I mean, a lot of philosophers have written about how we've kind of lost connection with this. Joseph Pieper, right after World War II in Germany, was writing about how, holy shit, all these terrible things just happen. And like everyone is just rushing back to like throw themselves into work. Like this is a mistake. Like we need to take a step back and reconnect with this broader sense of humanity. And I think a lot of people love when they first encounter this because it makes a lot of sense. We start to see weird trade-offs. Like, wait, why do we only feel like we have the right to go visit our family 2 times a year because that's when we're allowed to take vacation? Wait, why do we see vacation as a break from work or to like recharge for more work? And these things are weird, right? You're born, you're human, you're alive, you have the right to live. You don't have to earn leisure. Leisure is like your birthright. So that's kind of the background to it. And how do you escape like the default reality of overpowering tendency to see ourselves as workers first? It's really freaking hard. But I think it's worth leaning into, because if you're able to even find 2 weeks in your life that you can lean into that mode of leisure of like, you maybe you travel somewhere, but like maybe you're not on vacation. And maybe you're not filling your day with like, okay, how can we see as many things, go to every dinner? Maybe you just go to the supermarket and cook and walk around the village every day, wherever the heck you go. It could even be like, maybe you go down to like Durham for a day, right? You're in Charlotte and you just walk around the college campus and see what it's like just to exist.
I think where I get stuck, so I'm a full-time freelancer and still new to being 100% as a freelancer, is kind of separating the leisure, the work-life balance there, basically, of constantly check. Well, I don't keep email on my phone anymore, but like those types of things where you want to be on and you want to work on this normal schedule of 9 to 5 because everyone else is working on that schedule. And like I noted this morning, I was reading your book and it was 9 a.m. and I felt guilty about opening my computer because it was 9 and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to be on my computer doing something. So how do you kind of combat all of those things floating around?
I mean, there are practical concerns, right? If somebody's expecting you to be on at 9, that's like, don't just blow up your life. But yeah, just notice that feeling. I think noticing that feeling is step one. You kind of acknowledge that that's there and you're starting to ask the questions of why it's there. I think one of the things that was a big shift for me was going abroad and being in a different default reality. In America, this is where, I don't know, were you born here? Did you grow up here?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know exactly how you're supposed to feel about everything. This is how everyone feels in their own country. So this is why, like, can you go to a different country where like maybe freelancers are the norm? and just see how they're orienting their life. And if they're making fun of you for like, oh, you start work at 9, we're just going to get coffee. You might just go join them or work at night or different things like that. I think one thing I challenge people to do is take a freedom hour, like schedule it on their calendar during a default working time and just go wander without purpose.
See where you end up.
Yeah.
I like that. I might have to do that then. It's a good idea. So as we kind of have, well, we have 15 minutes left, but there's some questions about like careers and stuff that I kind of wanted to ask you. And the first of which is, if you were pre-college, so like a senior in high school, or maybe even in college right now, like, would you go to college? Like, what would you, basically, what would you choose to do with your life if you had like access to the information that you know now?
It's mind blowing. I mean, would I go to college? Probably yes. I think critics of college are a little too much sometimes. I think a lot of the people that criticize college underestimate how much they probably learn like cultural norms and like behaviors. My parents didn't go to college, so like I learned a lot of like how the world works at college from like other people. How do you get jobs? How do you network? How do you do all these things? How do you make friends? So I'd probably still go to college. I think reflecting back, like I just wasn't that curious. So it's so hard to know because I graduated college in 2003. There's no social media. There wasn't good writing on the internet. There were no podcasts. YouTube like maybe existed, but it was like cat videos. So yeah, man. It would be so cool though. Like, I wish I could be young again. It's also unknown though. Who knows? I could have been captured by like outrage or things like that. But man, I can only imagine like my curiosity would have exploded. I think I probably would have been more interested in tech earlier, maybe entrepreneurial stuff. But I mean, when I was 18, I was so scared of life and like I wanted certainty and I wanted like to other people to respect and approve of me. So I think those things are hard to overcome.
Oh yeah, 100%. Definitely. And that's, I went to a college preparatory high school and I could tell that like college, not like I was smart and by all means, like, you know, whatever. But I wasn't really interested in school, but I only went to school because, or to college because that was just the default thing to do. And right. I knew it was going to be paid for and all of these things. So I said, all right, why not? And like, even while in college, I didn't know what I wanted to do really, or what I was going to do post, but it was just kind of, all right, we're just going to follow. And then until something kind of piqued my interest, it diverted me from the traditional kind of normal path. So I definitely understand. And I can see you did graduate college a few years before me in a very different time. So that's interesting. But if you were, so like right now, if you were building like a career toolbox for anyone, no matter what their age, to kind of embark on this pathless path and go their own route, like what would you include for them to be successful and to make sure that it was like sustained and that they had like a good experience, I guess?
Yeah, I think finding reflection exercises, finding ways to be honest with yourself with what you really want. I don't think there is a right strategy or right approach to career in life. I think for most young people, probably just picking something is important. Like you're picking freelancing, I presume, right?
Yeah.
So you're choosing that. Like that's the most important thing. I think what I was kind of doing was just optimizing what I saw others around me doing. And I was picking a path and trying to go all in to like break into consulting, but there was no depth there. There was no connection to like what I really was good at, what I wanted to do, what brought me alive. So, I mean, at the end of my book, it's all these 10 things you can do. It's like figure out who you are. Keep reflecting on it and then keep experimenting and trying to make tweaks. I think that, like, the thing is, like, figure out what your career baggage is. what are your beliefs and expectations about how you think the world should work? And then really reflect, like, does the world actually work like that? It's like people say, well, I can't leave a job in under 2 years. Is that actually how the world works, or is that an idea in your head? It may be both, right? I can't switch careers. I'll be seen as X. Is that true? Go investigate. Like, there's plenty of stories online of people that change paths. See if it's true and investigate, and then figure out what you really want.
Yeah, I think that's probably where a lot of people get stuck, because they don't want to ask the questions, or maybe are too scared of what the answers are.
Yeah, because it's painful. It sucks when you write something down. You say, I want to be somebody that brings humor and positive energy to the workplace. And then you look at yourself and you say, holy crap, I'm absolutely failing. I'm not the person I actually claimed I wanted to be. It's embarrassing. It's shameful. It's sad. It's depressing. And that was kind of my lowest point before I decided I need to make a freaking change. I'm full of shit. I'm only on this path because it's the path I've been on. That's it.
At that point, did you have anyone else who's like noticing these differences and changes in you? Or was it solely you realizing that you were unhappy with where you were?
I think a lot of people around me were miserable too, in a numbed state of acceptance. Like I call it a low grade anxiety. And I think we learned to just tolerate that and accept, okay, yeah, life kind of sucks. And yeah, people around me, it seems so obvious now. I was just very cynical and negative, but I think some of the people I was surrounding myself were in very similar states. So it kind of took extracting myself from that world and that state of being to figure it all out.
That was
Yeah, at work, they were noticing. I was getting signals like, you're not a culture fit here, right? That's the phrase people use. All that means is like, you're not conforming good enough.
Yeah. That's I wanted to kind of go back to one of the things you said was like, the world sucks, or, you know, that was like the single scariest phrase that anyone could have told me while I was in college that made me not want to graduate and partially not want to get a real job, was that I didn't want to fall into that cycle of hating my life, because it was like, I directly correlated having a terrible job and hating the job with like how my life was going to turn out. And I didn't want that. And it seemed like 8 out of 10 of the adults that I talked to gave me that response. And I was like, that's so depressing to live all of these years, majority of your life, and to just hate it and for it to not get any better. And I couldn't understand the concept of like why you would buy into that, or like why you would want to do that.
Yeah. And it's learning to trust yourself and trust your intuition. I think we're all way smarter than we think. We just need to figure out how to like connect with our bodies and really reflect, right? Ideas and phrases can be so powerful. What are you supposed to do? You can't just not work. It's so easy to just believe that and be like, yeah, I guess I'm supposed to be miserable my entire life. And like, I basically wrote my book because I'm like, no, we can dream a little bit bigger, right? And the sad thing is, I think for previous generations, there wasn't the options or paths that there are now, right? If you wanted to host anything like a podcast, you had to figure out some way to work at a radio station and like work your way up. So there was a bit of like built-in suffering that was just part of life. And I think it's kind of a coping mechanism that people develop to be like, yeah, this is just, don't be naive. Don't be naive. You're just young and stupid. You'll realize that you're supposed to suffer. And kudos to you for saying like, no, I want to try and figure out something different. Even if I fail, I might learn something fun along the way.
Yeah, here we are. If you were to construct something for this generation, the ones that are kind of either my age, a little younger, somewhere around there, like what would you build to help them explore their curiosities, creativity, ideas, and just essentially like build a foundation to make them feel comfortable for wherever they wanted to go in life and what they wanted to do?
I would take them to another country and not let them work for a month.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was the big awakening for me, moving to Taipei and not having work, both kind of by design, but also just by like my own struggles to get virtual freelancing work. Yeah, and just have to be with yourself. And I don't know what will come out of that, but probably some interesting reflections.
Is it Most terrifying? People,
a little bit, because you have these voices of like, what if I go too far off the deep end, right? What if I live this weird life and like people don't accept me? And that's part of the journey too. It's kind of like the hero's journey. You disappear and then you figure out some way to come back and reconnect. And for me, the way to come back and reconnect was really to find like my inner like aliveness. Like I'm happy and like I'm loving life now. And all the like tension I felt with like people not accepting me and friends, that's kind of dissipated because I've come to like myself a little more again and just like be loose and happy and fun. And other people want to be around that and they don't care. Like your closest friends don't really care what the hell you do for work or what you do. But in our heads, we think that's like the most important thing.
Well, because there's the status and all of these other things that are associated with it.
Yeah, and it's uncomfortable sometimes. My business school classmates are getting like promoted to like senior executive positions at big companies and like getting promoted to like partner at consulting firms and like posting these pictures of these like epic million-dollar houses. And I'm like, oh my God. Like I just had the best year I've had. My fifth year, I made, I think, $70,000. It was like, I can't do any of what they're doing, but man, my life is worth like billions to me. So the trade-offs are like, you still get like, oh, the envy, but it's like, yeah, I'm happy with the trade-offs I'm making and I'm actively making them.
I love that. That's awesome. Very cool. Yeah. That brings me a lot of joy to just hear that from someone else who's kind of gone on a journey and has that perspective and is able to kind of honestly say that they are happy with where they are and like the steps that they've taken and everything.
Yeah, it's one thing to say you don't like status. So many people say this, even people who are like basically building their entire life around status. It's like seen as a bad thing to say I like money, power, status. Like the better thing is to figure out, do you actually like those? If you like them, you should probably design your life around them in a healthy way. Like there's nothing wrong with desiring money, status, security, importance, but like figure out how to like do that in a way that makes your life better. The other trap is saying, oh, I don't care about money or status. And then being on a path that values that. I was on a path that optimized for people that valued that, which meant over time, I was going to become more like them and less like what I claimed I wanted to be. So yeah, it's figuring out what you care about and then being honest with yourself.
Awesome. Well, I have two final questions kind of quick as we kind of finish up here. Sure. The first of which is if you had to give two pieces of advice to 17 to 25 year olds, what would it be?
I don't know. I listen to people like you. Like they might be tempted to look at people like me or like look at people like Tim Ferriss, but the real wise people you need to follow are the ones like one step ahead of you. And like you're closer in age to them and you probably have so much wisdom and things to share with them. So find people like Taylor. And two, yeah, just ask yourself the question, if you're not a worker, who are you?
I like that question. I got to think about that one. The last one is if you had 24 hours to live, unlimited money, and could travel anywhere at the snap of your fingers with whoever you wanted, what would you do?
Oh, I don't care where I'd be. I'd just go with my family. A bunch of my family lives in a small town in Connecticut. Yeah, I would probably go try to see my grandmother. She's 90 and she lives right near my parents. So I try to just be with everyone. I don't care where I'd go.